Welcome to Stone Cold Stros, episode 23 of season 2. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. Charlie writes weekly for sportsmap.com. Follow him on X at Palillo, where he will tweet the link to said weekly column. And Josh's work you can read daily on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at JoshJordan975. So guys, Astros go into the All-Star break four games above 500 and only one game back of the free-falling Mariners. But the loss in the final series at home is against their in-state rival and their in-division rival, not to mention the reigning World Series champions, Texas Rangers. Some familiar hiccups resurfaced, especially with runners in scoring position. How do you weigh, Charlie, the positives of the pitching looks good, Astros have turned things around, versus the long-term outlook for the rest of the season, which is the reinforcements that they hoped were on the way don't appear to be as close as previously thought?
Yeah, the long and winding road that has the Astros at the break, just one game out. Right at the outset of the season, if offered being one game out of first place at the All-Star break, as an Astros fan or the Astros themselves, no, our standards are higher than that. We'll let it ride and expect to be in first place and probably by more than one game at the break. But after 7-19 and then 12-24, the most recent time being 12 games under 500, 10 games out of first place at their bottom, to be one game back's a phenomenal position. Both the Astros surge 17 wins in 21 games until dropping the last two to the Rangers, which is its own issue, coupled with Seattle going into that free fall, that they closed that gap so fast and opened the series out of the All-Star break at Seattle. So it sets up for a fascinating two-front war, right? If the Astros don't ultimately win the AL West, right? It's not a given they're going to go ahead and stay ahead, wind up ahead of the Mariners, but there is the wild card picture. They're within 3.5 games of the Red Sox, who currently hold the third spot. The Astros have two series with Boston over the remaining portion of the schedule. You know, so much we can address, and our time is limitless. There's no game until Friday, so let's go. But just to touch on a few of the bases, right? Yiner Diaz, basically through May, was Martin Maldonado offensively. Right? He was fantastic the first week of the season and then atrocious for the better part of 2 months. Kyle Tucker, far and away their best player until fouling a ball after a shin, off his shin, which seemed relatively innocuous. Well, he's going to wind up missing close to, if not 2 months from this, right? Tucker's played in just 60 of the 96 games, 5/8 of the schedule, all he's played into this point. And the Astros are only one game out of first place. Altuve stunk in May. Alvarez stunk in May. Bregman was in a coma from the start of the season until mid-May. Chaz McCormick is still in a season-long coma. Verlander, 3 wins. Javier lost for the season. The bullpen, the heralded back end of the bullpen the first month and a half of the season. Blech. They're one game out of first place. Right? Geography helps. They'd be no closer than 4.5 games to the lead in any other division. Well, they're not in any other division. So they're right there with Seattle. They did miss an opportunity. It wouldn't have been the straight up kill shot, but after beating the Rangers Friday night and feeling you had Texas on the run a little bit, the Astros had swept that series. They'd have shoved the defending champs, the reigning champs, 8 games behind them and farther back of the Mariners and in the wild card race. And it just about laid out the Rangers. But to the Rangers' credit, Astros' offensive blame, however you want to slice it up, Eovaldi, he's just a stud, gave them 7 innings. And before he hit a wall, Max Scherzer's back, right? Verlander's not, and who knows when he's going to get back. But Scherzer's been competent. They have more pitching coming. The Rangers are in this race. They're just 4 games back of the Astros, 5 back of the Mariners. Astros-Rangers specifically, the season series is now coin flip. 5-5, 3 games in Arlington, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then that's it. Like the last time the Astros and Rangers play is August 7th. That's poor scheduling, but the way the schedule works now, everybody playing every other team, right? The Astros have a series with the Mariners the final week of the season at Minute Maid Park that may wind up telling the tale in the American League West. So, if you're an Astros fan, you'd love to run away with the division and laugh at everyone else. But this is going to make for compelling storylines and races, I think, on both fronts in the division and the wild card. unless Seattle's just going to completely capitulate. And let's see between now and the trade deadline, if their GM, Jerry Dipoto, does not get ownership approved financial additions to their lineup, the Mariners may well waste the best pitching staff, the best starting rotation, certainly in the American League, if not all of baseball. And so the Astros poised to take advantage of that, but the Rangers ain't dead yet.
They're not. And if we look at the season, this is about as good as I could expect at the All-Star break where the Astros are, right there in striking distance, one game back. And Charlie went through it, just all the injuries and underperforming and just so many challenges that the Astros have seemingly overcome at this point. They got a great shot to win this thing. And, you know, Espada, I mean, think about the conversation about Joe Espada at the beginning of the season and Dana Brown and what are they doing? And, you know, all the Abreu stuff seems like it's so long ago, you almost forget about it. Singleton's starting to show you he can do enough against right-handed pitching. DeBon's done some things. I'd like to credit, you know, it's somebody that doesn't get a lot, and it's Jeremy Peña. If I told you at the break he had a higher on-base percentage than Alex Bregman, I mean, would you have believed that with how much Bregman walks? Though Peña, he hasn't returned to form like he did in that postseason to where he's a huge power hitter and he's an MVP and all that kind of stuff. He has been solid. He's played good defense. He's actually hitting .274. You'll take that. The power's not quite where you would like at 7 home runs, but at least he's getting on base a lot more than he was before. Big credit to him. So I see positive things here. Yiner Diaz, Charlie mentioned, and Jake Myers, let's give him some props. 10 home runs here at the All-Star break. We didn't think we'd see this from Jake Myers playing a great defense. So I think once Kyle Tucker gets back, they're going to be in great position to move forward. And who knows with Chaz, he hasn't played that well, but Lo Perfido's come in and been serviceable for a rookie. I don't know if you could ask for much more from Lo Perfido. So I've been impressed with what they've done here over the last few weeks. They're in prime position. To me, it's just about pitching. It's the Ronel Blanco coming up on all these innings. Spencer Arrigetti, what can you count on from him? They have to get another starter. With Luis Garcia and McCullers now having these setbacks, you can't count on that being much of anything going forward. So not like the farm system's going to give you somebody you super trust to come up and make big starts, possibly, you know, even late into September, maybe even in the playoffs. So they got to get that fixed. They got to get another arm. I know Verlander could be back soon. I just don't think that's going to be enough. So that's what I'll be watching for. They got to get some more pitching. And then if I'm going to have to go to negative land for one thing, I don't know if you're going to trust a lead to be safe with Josh Hader in the postseason. I know he's had some okay performances here or there, but, you know, in big situation, he's given up a lot of home runs and it's on the fastball. Man, it'd be nice if he had a third pitch to really, you know, keep guys off balance. So that's something I'll be watching is, it's going to be hard to trust Hader in the postseason, assuming the Astros get there.
Well, with Hader, it's about the command. He's had walk issues in his career, and you can be wild in the strike zone, which speaks to the home run issues he's had in his career. You know, he's only missed out on one save opportunity, but he's pitched in multiple tie games where he's given up go-ahead runs. He's just been another closer this year. He has not been awesome. He's not a top five closer in the game this season. Maybe he has a huge second half. He has been used differently, hopefully. I mean, the wear and tear should not be a major factor. And it's been a talking point at times. Abreu, Presley, Hader, none of them are on pace to throw anywhere near 90 innings. So you talked about Espada. Everyone who was willing to yank on the ripcord, you know, a month and a half ago, has Espada gotten a lot smarter? I don't think so. Has he eased into the job some? Sure, as a first-time manager. But it's a player's game. And when Bregman stopped sucking and Diaz picked it up, and after Altuve and Alvarez flopped in May, they returned to form in June, suddenly Joe Espada, I guess, got a lot brighter and started winning more games. Right? Presley hasn't given up a run now in a dozen outings. Abreu plays with fire too often, but overall he's been good. Hader's been average as the closer. And sometimes, you know, it's how do you tilt the prism that can shape your viewpoint along with what you want to happen, hope to happen. So how you're going to see things can be differently from how someone in Seattle might see things. The Astros at the All-Star break lead all of Major League Baseball in batting average, right? After they could not buy timely hits early in the season, now they're in the top 10. in hitting with runners in scoring position. They're no longer bottom of the barrel, runners in scoring position with two out, where you either come through or inning over. Relapse Saturday and Sunday, 2-for-9 runners in scoring position, 0-for-9 Sunday runners in scoring position. But those hiccups are going to happen. But the Astros lead Major League Baseball in hitting. The Seattle Mariners are dead worst. The Astros hitting 262 as a team. Mariners 219. So if you're a Mariner fan grasping for a lifeline, saying, hey, the Astros are the best hitting team in baseball. We're the worst hitting team in baseball, and we're still a game ahead of them. So what if we add bats? What if our couple of guys stop blowing chunks and Julio Rodriguez atop their list? But if other guys go from horrible to merely bad, right? Seattle's lineup can pick up that way. Along with, I have to believe they're going to add one, what they hope to be, impact bat. Well, the Astros are going to add an impact bat. We're pretty sure at some point Kyle Tucker is going to return, and there's the Astros' substantial offensive acquisition.
On the Espada thing, I'm wondering if there's going to be a follow-up article from Bob Nightingale. Are they still missing Dusty Baker's steady hand steering the ship? Obviously, I'm picking fun there, but just as quiet are the Maldi Truthers, and that's been nice as well. As it goes to the season, I feel like the Astros season thus far has been like a trip to one of your favorite restaurants. When the salad came out, it was a little dry. Maybe there were some fingerprints on the water glass, but the entree came out and it was delicious. So you're like, okay, this is looking up. But as you're finishing your entree, there's a little tiny hair on the plate that you notice. So you're a little grossed out. So now we're just waiting on the dessert to see if the place can either redeem itself or whether we need to talk to the manager. Speaking of the manager, you guys have brought up Joe Espada and kind of the juggling act he's had to do this season as he's tried to figure out, you know, who the hot hand is in managing around Jose Abreu. He's got another seemingly big decision on his hands, and that's how does he play Chaz McCormick in the second half? And Chaz had, you know, to his credit, a couple of brilliant defensive plays over the weekend at the expense of Adolis Garcia, but he's had three hits over his last 25 at bats in the month and only five hits over his last 34 going back to the Rockies series. So is he the odd man out when Tucker returns?
Almost clearly has to be, because he hasn't hit left-handed pitching either, right? For his career, I think we touched upon this last week, right? McCormick has been a destroyer of left-handed pitching. Last season, he became decent against right-handed pitching, but for his career, he's been very batter's box bipolar. Great versus lefties, woeful versus righties. This season, he's been woeful across the board, and he was very bad at the start of the season. Then he had the leg injury, so all right, give him a little time coming back and maybe to find his rhythm. It has not happened. He's a 570s OPS guy. The AAA All-Star break coincides with the Major League All-Star break. Otherwise, I would say give Pedro León a shot. Send McCormick to Sugarland. Give him a week, 10 days of every day at bats and see if he can find his stride, his timing, whatever is going on. But he's been a lost sheep in the batter's box. Right, bad hitters are going to get hits once in a while, just as good hitters are going to have bad at-bats and games and stretches. So that, you know, McCormick had the 1-2-run game or grounds an RBI single the other way here. Body of work, he's been a lousy, lousy offensive player. And he's a good defensive corner outfielder, but not so good that you're thinking, well, you have to keep him in the lineup, as opposed to Jake Myers is going to remain the primary center fielder because of his defensive work. But with Lo Perfido as part of a platoon, you know, you're going to spot Dubon out there, though Dubon really hasn't hit very much the last month plus himself. León continues to put up numbers at AAA. I'm not saying he'd come up here and thrive, but he could not come up here and be worse than what Chaz has to this point. I just don't think they'd make that change to bring up León. Huge series at Seattle. If nothing else, learn from the history of, hey, let's bring Jose Abreu back just in time for a series at Seattle. But if you were to make that move, you'd be sitting McCormick where you're not taking down someone who's been contributing, frankly. But maybe that's one. If Chaz doesn't show something soon out of the All-Star break, his roster spot has to be in question.
Yeah, speaking of the Mariners series, we know about all their right-handed starting pitching. So I'd rather have Loperfido out there in the outfield than Chaz right now. It just makes more sense. He's playing better. The matchup's better. I think with Chaz, I hate to bring this up, it's kind of like the Jose Abreu thing where it's not just the numbers, it's the eye test. How many times do you see him get down in an 0-2 count or just see three pitches in an at-bat? You know, it's ugly too. So that has to catch Joe Espada's attention because you watch it and just like, woof. I mean, that didn't even look competitive. So Chaz has got to get that figured out, whether it's going to the minors or just waiting for an opportunity to be kind of a backup here in this outfield. But I'm with Charlie. I don't really see a place for Chaz once Kyle Tucker comes back. Jake Meyer's going to be in center and, you know, left field is, you know, Jordan can play out there too. They're going to have other options. Who knows how much Trey Cabbage, or maybe they send him down if he'll stick up here when Kyle Tucker returns. I don't know, but Chaz is a big concern, man. He was a guy that I was truly counting on this year to where he would either be the DH or he'd be in the outfield for you and be a positive plus player. It just hasn't happened.
Renel Blanco, we've touched on it, a lot of innings, velo's down, concern level for Renel Blanco, who's been one of your solid starters. I mean, he's been an absolute stopper for you this season. Definitely been one of your more consistent pitchers. Concern level for him going into the second half?
Yeah, there has to be a concern level. I don't think a panic. I don't think there should be a sense of inevitability that he's going to fade because Hunter Brown was basically terrible from May on last season. So I don't know how much of his getting worse as the year went along is that it just fell off the track and could never get back on there in conjunction with the innings workload. But Christian Javier, the second half of last season, Framber Valdez, how much physical, how much mental, but the second half of last season, if there's not an awareness of it with Ronel Blanco, that would be ignorance to think a guy's never thrown over 125 innings as a professional. And now you might be asking for 180, 190 innings out of him, but it's cross your fingers where the Astros are. You're not going to say, go on the injured list and miss two turns because of rest. But I do think you want to have him throw on 5 days rest where you can. And the Astros have some stretches where you'll get off days mixed in. But they also have two separate stretches between now and the end of the season where they play 18 days in a row. And then they play 16 days in a row where you're going to need at least five men in your rotation, maybe six. You don't want Arrigetti and Bloss to be two guys in a five-man rotation in the race. So a Verlander returning, if he can just be an all right five-inning starter, that would be such a boost. And then you're hoping Blanco holds up, Hunter Brown holds up, Framber Valdez holds up, and then you're going to mash your way to the finish line in conjunction with good enough starting pitching.
Yeah, it's a concern that the velo's down, and Chandler Ohm talked about it. He's not getting the same whiffs on that fastball recently. You know, but the slider and changeup are still so good that he's not getting smacked around. So the other thing with Blanco is he's one of your best pitchers. You're not just looking at needing him for the stretch run. You're looking at him being one of your starters in the postseason, should you make it. So you got to do whatever you can to make sure he's ready to go. But at the same time, you have to balance that with you got to get in first.
Yeah, you need wins. You've got to get wins, and the bullpen has been taxed at times. And so we've had to see, you know, Joe Espada has done his best to juggle that. We saw over the weekend, he waited till the very last moment to put Rafael Montero out there. And then Rafael Montero did Rafael Montero things in his inning. So I feel for them, but I do wonder, you know, if there's an innings cap coming up for him, if they baby him, you know, bringing him along a little slower into the second half. Just not sure what the options there are, because you need to win games. It's not just about protecting his innings. It's about winning games.
And one thing that might be helpful from a Blanco standpoint is that he's not some young phenom that you're worried about protecting Paul Skeens's arm for your future. He's 30, so that he's never thrown more than 125 innings in a season as a professional. On the one hand, that's concerning given what you might be trying to squeeze out of him this year. On the other, he doesn't have a career-long workload of wear and tear. So I guess it'll be an interesting and rather important case study for the Astros. But I don't feel like the arm is a ticking time bomb, that he's an injury waiting to happen. But the velocity stuff, that maybe the All-Star break gives him a second wind. Maybe you delay his first start, as important as the Seattle series is. Maybe you don't throw him until the third game in Seattle, as opposed to coming out of the chute with him Friday night, since he started over the weekend against the Rangers. Verlander's return to some extent, I think, is critical. Right, Luis Garcia, a setback that he hadn't looked real good in his minimal rehab innings doesn't concern me, but that they decided to back off even briefly with Garcia, counting on him would be a fool's errand. And obviously, at this point with Lance McCullers, it's over. It's over with Lance McCullers until or unless we see otherwise on a major league mound in a game that counts.
So now we're at the break, which gives us, and more importantly, GM Dana Brown, opportunity to reflect on the team and its needs, which naturally leads to suspense around what will happen at the trade deadline. So last week, we got a report from Jim Bowden that the Astros have spoken to the Mets about Luis Severino and Pete Alonso, the Diamondbacks about Christian Walker, and the Cubs about Cody Bellinger. So outside of Severino's name, seems like first base is a target, if we believe that report. Do you think, Charlie, that the interest is more about probable that they could make a trade for a bat more than an arm? And does that really fix what ails Houston?
Their priorities in order approaching this trade deadline, which is just 2 weeks out now. One, starting pitching; two, starting pitching; three, starting pitching. You know, it's fun to play fantasy baseball, and some fantasies, as in rumors, become reality, but there's just way more rumor, idle gossip from an ex-general manager like Jim Bowden, who's obviously well-connected and does plenty of baseball media, an accomplished writer like Bob Nightingale. It's a gossip game. There's a lot of stuff. Executives, former colleagues of Bowden or sources of Nightingale, they're going to put out what they want to put out. And they also know that there's a media cycle, a media monster that sometimes need to be fed. So more than 90% of stuff that's out there, there's either nothing to it or it's not going to happen. Specifically to a couple of the names linked with the Astros. The Mets hold a wild card spot at the All-Star break. They're not trading Pete Alonso unless they're getting something that they think is at least a level trade-off on their major league roster, right? Leave aside, they're in the New York media market they share with the Yankees. Any market, you're holding a wild card position. And while Alonso did not have a big first half of the season, he's still a middle of the order bat of quality. They're not going to just trade him for a couple of prospects. And we always need to include that for the higher end trade targets, a number of teams can easily outbid the Astros in prospect quality because of the state of the Astros system. Or if the Astros are willing to raise the bar on the quality of prospects that the Astros have, well, that would be doing more damage to the Astros farm system than if, say, the Orioles offered up their fourth and fifth best prospects, who are better than the Astros' top two prospects in terms of how major league talent evaluators grade these guys. Alonso, that would stun me. The Arizona Diamondbacks are the reigning National League champions. They're within a game of the wild card. They're not trading Christian Walker for a couple of prospects. How are you going to quit on your season to an extent if you're the defending National League champions in a market that's not an inherently great baseball market? How's that going to go with the ticket buying public in Phoenix? The Cubs are absolutely in striking range because in the National League, almost everyone other than the Rockies and Marlins is. And maybe the Nationals aren't. So Cody Bellinger, you know, the Cubs are within 3.5. He'd be a great fit for the Astros. He's better than Singleton. He'd also be another left-handed outfield option if you wanted to covet that. Bellinger's already said, I could let bygones be bygones. Astros fans would feel the same, by the way, if Bellinger came here and produced. But I'm not feeling it as a match with the Astros. I think other teams could come in over the top on them fairly easily. You know, the one name that would make some sense. And oh, by the way, Bellinger has a $28 million option for next year that he could pick up if he comes here and stinks. And says after Boris screwed over his market value I don't think the Astros want to risk being on the hook for Bellinger at $28 million next year while they're paying Abreu $19.5 million. Vlad Guerrero Jr. would make sense if Toronto decides we're going to tear down, we're going nowhere, right? Guerrero, you'd have him for this run next year before he becomes a free agent at a cost of $18 to $20 million if you're willing to swallow on that. If you know you're not paying Bregman, you're peeling that $20 million off. Verlander now, you're not on the hook for his $17.5 million because he's not getting to 140 innings this year. And in not a worst case scenario, but a suboptimal case scenario, if Bregman's out and you traded for Vlad Guerrero Jr., he can play third base. A poor third base, but third base, if you don't come up with something better at third base and you don't want Vlad at first because you have Singleton, Loprofito, whatever else. So, you know, you can juggle a lot of balls in the air. You're not going to catch many of them. And I just ran through the first baseman because those are the names that are, I guess, a little sexier guys who hit a lot of home runs and they're in the lineup every day. And Vlad Guerrero is a former MVP. Whose presidential line was it? Or it was ascribed to a president dealing with his problems. It's the economy, stupid. It's starting pitching, stupid.
I was going to say the same thing as Charlie. He took the words right out of my mouth. Pitching, 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 pitching. And I get it. Pete Alonso, New York market, big home run hitter. That's going to get page views. That's interesting to people. That's not the same as going after a back of the rotation starter, which is what the Astros really need. And to the Verlander point, you know, if he's no lock to come back next year, Dana Brown has said that he prefers not to trade for rentals. You have to wonder if the Astros are like, maybe we need a pitcher that could be a back of the rotation guy, not only this year, but next year too. Because if Verlander walks, and who knows if Arrigetti is going to be ready to come back next year, you'd probably like to have a better option. I know he hasn't been bad, but his ERA is over 5. It's a lot to ask from a young pitcher. So I think not just this year, but maybe next year too, they might be looking for a starting pitcher that can at least give them some innings, give them an opportunity to win some ball games. So that's where I'm looking if I'm Dana Brown. We got to get some more arms in here. And we already talked about the Ronel Blanco stuff. The innings are piling up. You know, Hunter Brown, he's done it before barely, but this is the first time we've really seen him for a long stretch look like a top of the rotation pitcher. So there's just a lot of unknown here. And then to put a cap on it, what we're hearing about Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers, that's terrifying. Like, I can't count on Lance McCullers to ever come back. So Luis Garcia, hopefully it's just a little hiccup, but you got to be thinking big picture here if you're Dana Brown. We got to get some more arms in here, especially if Verlander's not going to come back. And two other starters are a big question mark. So that has to be the priority. I wonder if the first base stuff is just kind of noise out there to maybe throw people off the scent, but I don't think you can throw anybody off the scent. If you're another GM in MLB and you're looking at the Astros and seeing what their rotation is, what their obstacles are and their injuries and how McCullers and Garcia may not be coming back anytime soon, they know the Astros need pitching. You're desperate. You're just going to have to bite the bullet and give up what you have to get up to patch that hole.
Yeah. The Astros prioritizing first base over starting pitching right now. Wouldn't be quite as ridiculous as if Seattle said, you know, we think we're going to try to strengthen our rotation and not worry about our lineup. But it would be close, right? As we race toward the deadline, it could well decide this division. Do the Mariners add more offense than the Astros add one more capable starter? Hey, the Astros could win this thing with their roster status quo. They've climbed within one game without Tucker, without Verlander, so they could do it. But not Dana Brown or not anyone who has rooting interest in the Astros should be thinking, I'm just solid with Arrigetti and Bloss as my 4 and 5 starter. Look, no teams have 5 starters that you're thinking they're all rock solid. They're really good. But the Mariners certainly have 4. And Brian Wu or Emerson Hancock is a more capable 5th than the Astros have a 4th, at least off what they've done to this point. The Phillies absolutely have 4, while the Phillies are by far the best team in baseball right now. So, you know, it's not that the Astros are doomed if they don't make an acquisition, but it's said about managers or coaches that their job is to put players in the best positions to succeed. The general manager's job is to piece together the best roster to give the manager the best opportunity to put the players in the best positions to succeed. And if Dana Brown said it before, I'll say it again. If Dana Brown does not add a starting pitcher by the deadline on that specific criterion, he will have epically failed. It doesn't mean the season is then condemned to be a failure, but Dana Brown has to acquire a starting pitcher. The good news is I think we all think he knows this.
Rafael Montero for Pete Alonso straight up. Who's saying no? Oh, them? Okay. Yeah. Well, look, we've talked about this privately. Outside of Verlander, how many times have any of the names tied to the Astros and trade rumors ever materialized? The answer is none. It's never happened. We've never had an idea of who that big acquisition was going to be. There's been a lot of names. None of them materialized. And the Verlander thing was a very unique circumstance because they basically put it out there for God and the world to see that they were selling, and Scherzer went first. Josh, you alluded to it. We've talked about how these leaks sometimes are smoke screens to throw people off the scent. It would take a Chernobyl level of smoke to throw anyone off the fact that Houston needs arms at this point. Charlie, you mentioned the Seattle series bearing down. We talked in the first part about Texas is getting healthy and they're on the come now. How critical is this series coming up with Seattle? You come out of the break against them. How critical is this series to set the tone early? And then how dangerous do they become if they do go and get that bat?
Important, not critical, first addressing Astros Mariners. It feels to me like it's more critical to Seattle, actually, in that the Mariners just woeful going into the break, losing 3 out of 4 to the Angels. Right? They're fortunate the Astros dropped the last two to the Rangers, or the Mariners would either have company at the top of the division or be behind the Astros. Instead, they still have a one-game lead. And again, perspective and timing. If opening day the Mariners were offered a one-game divisional lead coming out of the All-Star break, we'll take it, I'm sure, from a Mariners perspective. But when you had a 10-game lead inside a month ago, uh-oh. And I think it will be both demoralizing and a reality of you've left yourself short if they don't go add a meaningful bat or two. And their farm system is in vastly better condition right now than the Astros with the cards that they can play and going after an acquisition or two. So we'll see what they do there. You know, if the Astros get swept in Seattle, they're 4 out. So it's not like, uh-oh, it's over. Conversely, if they sweep, they're only 2 games ahead and it'll feel like the Astros have all the momentum in the world. Well, we've covered that before. Momentum, you have it until you don't. See Seattle a month ago. See the Astros a month, 6 weeks ago. I'm interested, and we touched upon it briefly in part one this week. If you're Joe Espada and powers that be maybe above him, how do you line up your pitching in this series? Right, qualitatively, it's simple. You go Ronel Blanco game one, Hunter Brown game two, Framber Valdez game three. But with the workload stuff in mind, I think I'd throw Framber in game one, buy an extra day's rest for each Blanco and Brown, and then whichever order you choose to go with them. I would think Blanco's just been the better guy all year long, though Brown, save the one hiccup start, two back, has been better over the last month. You know, I'm sure Seattle will be lining this up, knowing it's a very important series. Remember, the Mariners have beaten the Astros 5 out of 7 so far this year. So if Seattle takes 2 out of 3 in this series, the Mariners clinch the head-to-head tiebreaker. If it comes down to that in the end, and we know Astros-Rangers, that's exactly what it came down to in the end last year. So it's certainly a very important series, but we're still, or will still only be in the back half of July. It's not vital, and Astros-Mariners play 3 at Minute Maid Park the last week of the season. The Rangers probably hoping that nobody sweeps it, right? Let the Astros actually take 2 out of 3, which would leave the Astros and Mariners tied. And if the Rangers are doing a business of their own, they'd be guaranteed to gain ground on one or the other if they take 2 out of 3 to start the second half themselves. Astros, Rangers have just one more head-to-head series in Arlington in early August. The Mariners and Rangers have a couple of series left head-to-head. So there's a lot of yarn to still unspool in this race.
It looks like to me, unless the Astros get hit with another wave of injuries, which you can't rule it out, it's been happening all year, but I think this is going to kind of go down to the last few games of the season. It just kind of like it did last year. So, you know, as far as the trade deadline, it's, you know, the Astros have the best OPS out of the Mariners and the Rangers, but they have the worst ERA out of those three teams. So clearly, and upgraded pitching is what the Astros need to do here. And it's just counting on Verlander to come back at his age and pitch the rest of the season healthy. You're really kind of rolling the dice there. And, you know, we mentioned the other guys coming back from injury. Who knows? So I just think pitching has to be the focus. And yeah, it's not the end of the world, if they got swept in this series against the Mariners. But boy, you know, after losing that series to the Rangers before the All-Star break, if you come out and get swept by the Mariners, all that positivity that was kind of coming with the Astros over the past several weeks, that kind of falls to the wayside a little bit. You know, some of the shine comes off of that. So they need to come out. And I'm kind of with Charlie. Before he said it, I was like, let's go with Fromber out there in that first game. Give Blanco, a little extra rest. Fromber has been your ace in the past. Let him go out, do his thing. Hopefully he doesn't get any ground balls hit to him that he sails over the first baseman's head or anything like that. But, outside of that, you can trust Fromber that on most days he's going to give you a quality start.
There's clearly more pressure on Seattle, at least for this point in a season going into the series. And then the bigger picture, right, the Astros acquisitions for the stretch run, you're hoping are absolutely Kyle Tucker. You hope Verlander to some extent and starting pitcher to be acquired, right? The Rangers, Jacob deGrom is kind of their Verlander. They're hoping to get him back in August. There's also Tyler Mahle. Scherzer's been back and looked pretty good over his first five starts as he's still building up. And the Rangers are hoping to get Josh Jung, their stout rookie third baseman, who played four games this season before ex-Astro Phil Maton shattered his wrist with a pitch. Jung hasn't gotten back yet, right? His fill-in, Josh Smith, has actually been the Rangers' best player this season, but they'll move Smith around the field. Jung comes, that's a big bat acquisition for them. The Mariners, what is going to be their move? They have the best rotation. They have by far the worst lineup, the worst team batting average in baseball. So I think the pressure, the burden, the bullseye, it's all on the Mariners to upgrade. If I get a dual entry between the Astros and Rangers, if Seattle doesn't add either of the two bats, I think they should be trying to acquire. But at least one, I'm certainly taking the Astros or Rangers, if not both, to go ahead of them. And individually, if you tell me the Mariners are not going to add a quality bat, should can be a dangerous word to use, but it feels like you get Tucker back, you get Verlander back a little bit, that the Astros should win the division again, unless the Rangers just really roll through, take the season series from the Astros and make their title defense legit.
Yeah, that is the danger of saying should, because I think a lot of Astros fans thought the Astros would be in worst situation, and they have been with Tucker down, but they've been able to make this run with Tucker down, so they've been able to power through it. And I guess if you're looking for bright sides here, Josh and I, we've discussed this before, if JV can stay healthy, he's saved a lot of innings on his arm this season while he's been battling through the neck injury, so perhaps that plays in Houston's favor down the stretch. As you're pitching deeper into the season, maybe his arm's a little fresher, as long as that neck can stay healthy.
I mean, fears like Javier, the neck connects to the arm somehow, and that's why it's taking so long for Verlander to get back from a stiff neck.
Exactly. And given the secretive nature of Houston, we don't really know what is really ailing him. Fingers crossed, we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. Before we go, the Sports Map family and the city of Houston lost one of its most iconic voices suddenly over the weekend. We lost our beloved friend and colleague, Ken Hoffman. He's been an incredible mentor and personal friend to me over a decade plus that I've known him. But that story is not at all unique. There's no shortage of people with similar anecdotes out there. Josh, I know you wanted to say something about Ken, and between the three of us, Charlie, you knew him the best. So Josh, we defer to you first, and then Charlie, you can give us some parting thoughts on our friend, longtime Houston Post, Chronicle, Culture Map, and Sports Map columnist, Ken Hoffman.
Yeah, outside of just being a great dude, I mean, Ken, he's just an awesome person, so fun to be around. He was also a great sports columnist. And there's been a lot of nice things said about Ken, for obvious reasons over the last few days. And most of that's about, his work with the Chronicle and Culture Map and his other spots that he worked at. But I just wanted to give credit to Ken for being a great sports columnist. I've been the editor of the website for several years, so I've gotten to read every single one of his columns. And I mean, the guy's just, he's brilliant, and he knows that he loves his Astros. And I wanted to, you know, give some credit to Ken in that arena, because maybe people don't realize, because he was so good at everything else he did, he was also really great at writing about sports and had a lot of really unique and interesting takes on the team. And he loved his Astros. So I just wanted to bring that up and mention that, you know, looking at the numbers, I believe Ken had two of the top five best performing articles in the history of the SportsMap website, one of them with almost 500,000 page views. So just wanted to give some credit to Ken. He was a guy that really talented at a lot of different things. Great person. He's going to be missed.
You know, I guess like snowflakes, we're all unique. Ken was really unique, quirky, savagely witty, smart, funny, as we all know. I think he would be secretively appreciative, publicly appalled that we're doing this, if he were aware of it. Huge sports fan. One of our greatest common bonds was tennis, and we had mostly fun knockdown dragouts, probably more than 1,000 times over more than 15 years that we played together. I noted in a brief little tribute in a culture map story that he'd have been very happy that Alcaraz beat Djokovic Sunday. Liked Alcaraz, but more that he disliked Djokovic. I'll be kind of a Ken dynamic to that, as Josh alluded to. Huge Astros fan. Altuve is his favorite Astro of all time. Foremost, while a great loss for each of us and for so many who consumed his work for so many years in Houston, most specifically and sadly for his wife Erin and son Andrew. Just a terrible tragedy. You know, our numbers all come up at some point. You know, you hear the untimely death. I mean, how many timely deaths are there in the world? But this one hits so hard for so many people in so many ways, rightfully so. There's probably a Beatles lyric or a Curb Your Enthusiasm line that would be a fitting way to cap that. But I'm just going to leave it there in the spirit of what we do. And the spirit of Ken's rooting interest. We'll miss you, Ken Hoffman. Go Astros.